How can organizations come out from climate anxiety and paralysis? That's what we chatted about with Hayley Anderson in an interview for my next book on how to create services that serve both humans and nature. Hayley is a climate change project coordinator at ICLEI Canada, which is part of a global network of more than 2,500 local and regional governments committed to sustainable urban development. With Hayley, we uncovered 11 service design principles that can help come out of climate anxiety. Here are my 5 favorite ones. Climate change creates one of the best briefs for creative work. Use the 7 generations philosophy. Learn from 7 generations before and think about the impact that your work has for the next 7 generations. Be active for the planet, but don't be a dick to other humans because of it. Don't thrive for 100% sustainable. Do it imperfect but consistent. Don't work alone. Bring in the community, find the community, or create community. Thanks so much to Hayley for this lovely and insightful conversation. Hayley, it's such a pleasure to meet you today. We have common friends who said that we need to be in touch together to discover more about the worlds of sustainability and service design. And today I'm excited to speak with you.
It's great to speak with you as well, Daniele.
And so my first question for you is, when you go to a birthday party, how do you present yourself usually?
Different every time. Usually it's something to do with hobbies, because I think that's more relatable and interesting. And a lot of those hobbies are often to do with crafting and repurposing materials, which spans into the work that I do anyways. It's a lot to do with. I'm a person that's interested in creating and sustainability and curious about all things life.
Awesome. So it seems like the pitch for a wonderful human on Earth.
And so
I'm also interested in not only knowing your party self, but also know a bit more about your business self. We always have kind of these different parts in ourselves. And I'd like to know, how could you maybe share a bit of your journey of how to bring sustainability and these topics in businesses? How did it all start, and where are you at with those ideas?
I guess it depends how far back I could go, but I did start thinking about sustainability and the environment as young as a child. I grew up in a family where we made crafts all the time, and that stayed true through my whole life. And everything was always, what can you do with what you have? And then I continued on to design school, where that ethos was pretty well supported and present by a couple of the professors that I had. And I continued to go down the path of design and communications, and started realizing more and more that there's a potential to affect change through communication and design. But I didn't have enough of the context politically or in terms of like how change is made on more of a policy scale. So I decided to go back to school for urban planning. So my career has been a blend of working with community and design and sustainability, and trying to find ways to bring people into making decisions about their spaces, their cities, their businesses, and the things that they interact with.
Awesome. So from what I'm able to see, and I think it's always, you're too humble to name drop, so I'm going to do it a bit for you. From what I'm reading on stuff like LinkedIn, you're pretty prolific. You're well involved. So if I'm just reading, I see climate change project coordinator for ICLEI Canada. Could you tell me what that is? Because it's a fancy acronym, but I don't know what it is.
Yeah, ICLEI is a nonprofit, and it started in Germany actually over 20 years ago as a nonprofit working with sustainability for local government. I work with the Canadian chapter, and the work that I do is largely to do with climate adaptation. So we are on track for changes. We know that this is going to happen. Climate change is happening. how do we live our best lives with that in mind? Mitigation on the other side is how do we prevent those impacts from getting worse? It's important to have both of those things, but the team that I'm on, we focus on, okay, we know that these impacts are coming. How do we prevent them from making our lives worse in terms of the impacts that we're most affected by here in Canada, in Toronto? It's a lot to do with flooding, wind, heat stress, and a lot of it comes down to how do we make people informed on the ways that they can prevent that stress. If it's, okay, there's a building that you can go in on a super hot day to get a bit of shade and make sure that you're not out in the heat and the blistering sun midday. It can come down to communications. It can be a lot to do with working with municipalities to develop programs and services so that people can access rebates and different kinds of programs that help them enable that kind of prevention and risk prevention in their own lives.
That's super interesting. I love that you're bringing this idea that it's not just prevention, it's not just mitigation. Obviously, there is like both elements which are important and which we should take into account. That's an interesting part, which I feel from the little I know about sustainability, which is not a lot. I've heard this term that we often get into kind of like a tunnel vision in one thing, either it's carbon stuff or it's mitigation or it's prevention, and we get stuck into one element. Exactly. But that we need to think about it in a more broader way.
Yeah, I definitely think that is the case. But personally, I'm maybe a little bit the opposite because I find all of it so fascinating and interesting that I can't help but dance around all of them. And even as you're talking about carbon, I'm thinking about, okay, carbon emissions are typically thought of in operational sense. So the things that keep your building running, lights, heating, cooling. The other side of it that is less talked about is embodied carbon. And that's the pieces of your buildings, the infrastructure, all the things that make up the things around you, all of that has embodied carbon. So when we talk about materials being wasted, you're wasting carbon that has already been spent. So it's this multi-layered, multi-pronged kind of thing that you have to think holistically, but you can't do everything. You have to be able to focus enough to make progress. Mm-hmm. And that is something that I honestly have struggled with for a while because I find everything so compelling and they're all problems to be solved.
Absolutely. And so building on that, you're telling me I'm interested in all these possibilities, all the things that we could do, because the problem is so big. Obviously, there is so many things that we should do. Mm-hmm. And still, there is like this need of focus. What has helped you in your journey to put a focus on something specific? Is this even something that makes sense? How are you thinking about that?
Yeah, I think working with the people that are in my network is one way to focus, is that local talent, local knowledge, local context that really is helpful. And thinking about human need, what is the most impactful and what is the most needed for your community? That's what I've found to be more of a focus. But honestly, it comes down to sometimes I just really like design and furniture. So sometimes I focus on, okay, what about making systems for better procurement for people that are in the crafts and want to create furniture? What if we intercept their normal supply lines or supply chains with a reuse solution? We've got tons of materials that are going to landfill every day. Let's find a way to take those, put them into supply streams and add value to them again.
Super interesting. So you know that I'm doing these kind of calls in the not so secret plan, but then extract tiny bits of provocations that we can then package to people. And there is an early idea that I see here, which is this notion of if you are in a situation where you're overwhelmed by all the possibilities, there are two paths that can work quite well. One, which is start locally, start with the communities you have access to. Be very pragmatic. Don't think about the whole country, mm-hmm. the whole continent, the whole world, but just start with local stuff that you can do tomorrow. Or the other one, which I love, is, you know, sometimes make something which you're just passionate about, which just in French, we have this saying which says the heart has its ways that we can't explain. And so if you don't have a thing where the heart is strongly saying, go in that direction, then local will be obviously a great way to start. But if the heart has its ways, then follow the heart. That could be an interesting approach to just take the overwhelming effect of, oh, climate change, climate emergency, crisis, it's so big. And suddenly we can say, yeah, but local, that's already something interesting.
Yeah, definitely. I think that it can be really overwhelming, and there have been more and more conversations and groups of people coming together to try to combat that climate anxiety. And it is something that I struggled with for a while. And now at this point, I've come full circle to, I'm really energized by all of this because it's almost like a creative constraint. How do you work within this realm of there's climate change? Okay, what are we going to do about it? If we didn't have that problem, we'd just be floating around. Oh, we could do whatever we want. I'm not creative enough to come up with an idea from the thin air. So my creativity comes from that place of need.
Interesting. So from what, if I'm understanding you, you're saying all these constraints that come from climate change, climate crisis, are not, we say it in a poetic way, are not problems, that are the frame that we have for the artwork that we're going to do. And maybe the frame is now much smaller, but doesn't mean that we can't use a microscope and take a very small pen and do little dots to create a masterpiece. We still can do that.
Yes, totally.
Okay. And is there something else that in your journey where you said you had a bit of this climate anxiety that helped you to be at peace with it, but not in a peace where you say, okay, fuck it, I'm gonna go in holidays and we're all gonna die, so no worries, but more in a peace which is this action peace where you do what you have to do and what you can do, and you can be at peace with doing that.
Totally. Yeah, it's really easy to think, oh, I'm not doing the most important thing. And even the thing that I'm doing that is trying to make an improvement is not the most important one. And I need to get to the top of the pyramid, to the top of the problem. But I think that over the years, I've focused on what I can do, what I have value bringing and what my skills are. And also that community piece again is like, finding the community of people that are actually working on some of these problems and are doing it in a positive way, in a way that is community focused and brings value, but also camaraderie. I think that's really what gave me a lot of support and hope, because I've been the only person in the room sometimes where I have that concern or that voice saying, what about the environment? What about sustainability? And it's always, yeah, we'll get to that. But once you start working with people that are also in that similar mindset, it makes you feel like you're not totally alone in it. And it makes you feel like progress is possible and that it is real. I think a lot of it came down to, yeah, it's something that we'll get to, but it's not really our focus. So now that I'm able to focus on it, I feel that momentum and that energy and feeling productive is a really good source of positivity as well.
Super interesting. I'm repeating myself. I'm always saying super interesting because I'm learning so much. It's a topic that I don't know anything about. So thank you so much for bringing me in your world. And there is another piece which I'm seeing here, which I find so interesting, which is this idea that we have some anxiety with all of that. It's overwhelming. So there is a kind of a first element that you're bringing, which is say, start locally, start either with your passion or start with your skills, like limiting the scope by, okay, now it feels like something that I can manage. The other thing is switching the perspective by saying it's a creative constraint. Like in any design process, we love a good briefing. We always say clients can't make good briefings, and Planet is giving us a great briefing, which is very clear. So it's a very good client. And then the third aspect, which is here, which I feel is like in all of this anxiety, feeling that if in a business you're like the only force pushing for it, to not do it alone, to find community. From what I'm hearing, sometimes you can find a community within the business, but sometimes you can't. And if that's okay, that's also okay. You can also find people who are in other businesses doing it alone, and you can be a team of alone people who can exchange about, oh, okay, this is something that I did to make it move forward, and it worked well on my side. Ah, cool. Maybe I'm going to steal that.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you have other elements that you can maybe share on this kind of don't do it alone aspect? Because from what I heard, you're now in a position where obviously it's like a more climate focused group, but how did you do it when it wasn't a super climate focused group?
Yeah, that's a good question. A lot of the work that I have done, even when I was independent doing freelance graphic design before I went back to school for planning, it was more who are the clients that are working in this space that I can find. And I did find a niche to work in projects that were either human-centered, ethical, sustainable. And I do recognize that those are more rare and it's harder to find those clients. And sometimes it's a double-edged sword where it's, okay, you want to work in these projects, but you also have to sustain yourself. And sometimes those projects don't have as big a budget. So I think it's also about balance and not trying to be 100% sustainable or 100% under that kind of umbrella all the time. If you can make a roadmap for yourself and try to be consistent with it, that's what I've done. Is I've just been incredibly consistent because I can't help it. It's what I care about. And that's how I ended up talking to you, is I've been consistent and I've made these relationships and people think of me when they think of sustainability and design. So I think that if the community side of things isn't happening where you currently are, you can try to create it. And that's something that I learned a little bit later on too, is if something doesn't exist, it means that you should create it or seek it out, because it might exist, but it might not be exactly where you are. Take inspiration from somewhere else. For example, I am going to Copenhagen in a couple of weeks, and there's a business there that I'm super inspired by, and I'm meeting up with them to talk about how we might do something like that here in Toronto. And it was really just a simple email, but in previous times in my life, I would be like, oh, why would they answer me? Who am I? They don't know who I am. So it's really having that kind of confidence and curiosity and just putting it out there into the world and trying to connect with people, because I think that it's easy, at least for myself, to say, oh, I don't really have any reason for anybody to want to talk to me. It's just me over here in Canada doing their own thing. They've got their whole business. They're doing great. But I think people are generally very open and welcome to having conversations about things they're mutually interested in. And people can be more generous than you assume. So I think that confidence, but also trust that other people are willing to share and have that generosity.
It's lovely to hear your story, that in some ways community is one email away. It's just an email. It seems like for maybe people like me who are introverts, can feel like, oh wow, this, who wants to talk to me? And obviously it feels a bit scary and stuff, and it's just an email. And if people don't respond, it's okay. It was just an email. It didn't cost you much, and it's quite easy to write. And if you can't write it, you can find a template.
ChatGPT will help you.
I think there is a very interesting idea here, which is additional to this don't do it alone aspect, which is it's okay to not be 100% perfect. In French, we sometimes have this joke that we make in soccer training and this kind of stuff, where we say, bad, but consistently bad. It's like, it's not a great group, but we're not good, but at least we're consistent in how bad we are. We're reliable. And I think there is something interesting here, which is at least start small, but keep doing it instead of having these peaks of, oh, we're going to do it perfect. And then we're going to forget about it. And then we're going to do even worse. Mm-hmm. And instead just say, hey, let's make it 10% better for the next 5 years. And then maybe 20% better. And slowly we'll get to a place where it's pretty good.
Yeah. And I do think that there's an element of pressure when you're working in an environment where you're like, I only have one shot. I can't mess it up because the people that are listening are going to critique this. Or if something is intended to be sustainable, but you haven't done your kind of due diligence and there is some kind of an unintended consequence, that can diminish the kind of like investment in or the belief in doing work that is sustainable versus the other kind of pressures of profit and, I don't know, the kind of wicked problems of our time. Which one do you pick? And it's not about picking. It's about, okay, you've tried and that's great. Keep trying. You are going to learn, but it's not as easy to learn and fail as it is with, say, like a tech platform where you're like trying to fail fast. There's a bigger scale to it because you're working with systems and people and environments. And when you do mess up, it's a little bit more visible and it's a little bit more detrimental. But it also is where we're in such a long timeline that the impacts that you see are going to be probably a decade away. So you have to find those little moments where you're getting those moments of feedback and communicating progress and saying this kind of action might not actually be present in like the public eye for another 10 years. You won't see the effects of it. So even if you have messed up, there's more chances to redirect.
Recover. From it. That's interesting. How do you work with that? Because maybe you know that show, I think it's called The Good Life, where in short, they present a dilemma, which is it's impossible to make the right choice. Because the right choice, it would be a calculation which is impossible to do. And it shows, that's either you do something or either you get stuck in, okay, if it's all fucked up and we can't even know what is good, then what do we do? And it's a question that I feel sometimes businesses have, also small businesses, where they say, yeah, I'd love to do something. But whenever I say, I'm going to do this, people point me and say, yeah, but no, that's a very bad idea because there are these unintended consequences. And so how can we help people when they are in this situation where it's hard to predict even if something is really good? Is there kind of mental models or things that help for that?
That's a really good question. But yeah, the paralysis effect is really, it's definitely a real thing. Let me just think on that because I think it really depends on the size of business and the type of business. And if you are working on kind of more of a sales or interaction-based business, it doesn't always have as big of a impact because you're like, oh, we've done these things and it's incremental and you can see the progress over time, maybe because it's accumulated. But when it's like a larger kind of infrastructure piece, it does get set on a path maybe, and it's harder to reroute that path because it's in a plan, it's in a policy, like it's a lot bigger. But yeah, I don't know. I have to think about that a bit more. Can you reframe the question maybe?
Yeah, obviously. So in your experience, so in the work that you've done, what's something that you did to help people realize that there is something that they can do, even if they feel all options seem like have issues? It's like choosing between pest and cholera. So why would I choose? Is there a way to get out of that view? Maybe I'm thinking out loud. Is it like, oh, it's not about diseases and you just have to make 10 steps back and then you realize that there is something else? Is it to ask another question?
Okay. I think I have some.
Does that help?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I think there's co-benefits with a lot of these things that you have to find what the value is either the kind of internal business value, what is the personality of the business, what are the people in that business or the customer, what are they interested in, and whether it's some kind of an aligned value. Okay, you want to save money. Okay, you want to have a protected future for your family. You need housing. All of these different things can be co-benefits. So, for example, if you're trying to encourage a kind of larger business to maybe install a food garden or something like that, your employees can use it. They'll be interested to go out on their lunch break and come back to work more energized. It's a good kind of internal service, but it's also good marketing if you communicate about what's happening there. Maybe you can share the food in community that you're growing, connect with people and use it as an engagement opportunity, invite people in. How do you have conversations around these things with your customers? How do you have conversations around these things with your employees to try to see, okay, this is what you're actually interested in for your personal life or for your work life? These kinds of sustainable outcomes or tweaks to your business and service align with those actually.
Yeah. So again, when we are in this analysis paradigm, then we can bring in this co-benefits and say, okay, let's have all the solutions and which one is more interesting for us also. Saying, hey, they might be all at least quite good on the sustainability, and this one is either more fun or is just aligns better with our brand values, gives us an opportunity for communication, and all the other ones we can't communicate about it. So yeah, it could be like a very simple way to say, when stuck, just add a bit of ego into it, and that's okay. Don't start with it, but if you're stuck, then ego can help a little bit, or business ego can then add help.
And I guess it's that human-centered design focus. At the end of the day, what are we doing any of this for? It's because we want human life to be successful and well. We live on this earth, and the earth will be fine without us. Yeah. It will do its thing. We are just here. So as humans, it is in our interest to do the things that are good for us. And I think that a lot of that good can come from sustainable practices. We're seeing these things in air quality. When we do consume fossil fuels and things like that, it does have negative impacts on human health. And the same thing when we extract materials and throw them away, it has an impact on our livelihoods. And we're in theory running out of space. It's definitely happening more in Ontario right now. Our landfills are filling up, and we're going to have to negotiate between how we use our land. And it's not as simple as that. But if you compare land uses, it's like, we're trying to get more housing over here. We need to develop more housing so that people have places to live. It's not a direct correlation to say that building a landfill is a bad choice, but if you just put these things side by side, even in like very basic terms, it's why are we dedicating land to these things? So it's not as simple as option A and option B, but if you're presented with these things, it's almost like a cognitive dissonance. Would you like to have housing? Yes. Would you like to have a landfill? No. These things are leading to us needing to have more landfills.
I already have 6 elements mapped from our conversation. Okay. And yesterday I sent you a little reminder by saying, hey, if we can find 3, I'd be already super happy. Are there other elements than what we discussed here that while you were under the shower this morning, you were like, oh, an idea comes up? Usually for me, it's under the shower that this stuff comes up. Is there a kind of a under the shower idea that we didn't talk about yet?
I did actually make a note this morning. I'm looking at my phone because I wrote it down. But I think we did talk about creative constraints. And I think that kind of the start with what you have piece, it is like on a material level, but also on like a human level. Yeah. Start with the people and the relationships that you have. And I think that being efficient is sustainable as well, because if you are efficient in okay, maybe I don't need to create this internally. It exists already. I just need a partner. Mm-hmm. Really efficient and sustainable to be collaborative.
Okay, yeah, so it's a very interesting reframing to say collaboration is a great path towards sustainability.
Yeah. And then from that carbon life cycle world is when you start something, think about the end. If you can't obviously predict the future, but if you're working with materials, when you're designing something, how will it be disposed of or reused at the end of life? If you're thinking about the life cycle of a service or that customer experience, how does it come back to the start to inform how it was developed and then reiterate?
And there's a good resource. I'm going to mess his name up, but you will correct me, I think, as soon as I will say his name. Joe McLean, who wrote the book Ends.
I actually don't think I know that one.
Okay, good. So he's the expert of endings. So he has even a course called Engineering, which is like Engineers of the Ends. So that's a resource for people interested in that. That might be quite interesting. He created two books about it.
And I don't has know why I haven't heard of course. This.
Okay, good. So happy to have shared that one with you. So that's a good transition. Are there resources like Joe that you can share where you say, oh, this for people starting in that journey, businesses who have questions about that? Can be a framework, can be a book, can be a name. Obviously, there is your name, which will add to the list. But outside of your name, are there people that you think are worth mentioning and that people should watch, or books or anything else?
I think so. I've done some reading on Daniela Meadows' work, Thinking in Systems, and a lot of that is just naturally sustainability, because systems and ecosystems, whether you're looking at the larger system of the earth and nature or an ecosystem of a relationship or business, it has a lot of really interesting practical tools, but also philosophies around sustainability. But there's also, it ties to a lot of indigenous knowledge as well, where like these theories and philosophies have existed for centuries and generations. And I would encourage people to look into the Seven Generations philosophy, and it's basically thinking about the generations that came before you and the generations that will come ahead of you, and you live within the center of those. So who can you learn from three generations before you? Who can you protect or set up a world for in three generations? So you're not thinking about your life and being completely shut off to the kind of ecosystem of your own world. It's thinking about nature and people connected and how those work in tandem. So I'm probably not doing it justice, but there's a lot.
You did.
Thank you. There's a lot of literature out there around seven generations, and I would encourage people to look into indigenous knowledge and to look to elders for that kind of information.
This resonates so big in me, because often in service design, which is more my practice, we often say, think about what's happening before and after. We always say a service doesn't exist by itself. If you take a flight, usually there is a train ride. Before the train ride, there is people packing up their stuff. There is a checklist. There is all of that stuff. And once you took the flight, there is a lot of stuff that goes after. And thinking about the before and the after is a very important practice in service design, and having that, which is like this the super meta view of, okay, seventh generation back, what can I learn from them, and then seven generations in front, what can I do for them so that they still are here and that they can still thrive and have an interesting life, changes really the perspective of what you're doing.
And it might not even really end up that way, but the fact that you've thought about it, it's community again. I think that's really the core of it. You're thinking in a holistic and communal sense instead of an individualistic sense.
Yeah, and in some way, it brings back this is something that I heard from you a few times, which is this change of measurement. It's from now to seven generations. It's from you to community. The measurement is much bigger. The scale is much bigger than what we used to work with in businesses, where we're like, okay, are we going to serve 10 people because we're a cafe, or 100 people, or 1 million? And then suddenly it's, oh no, but we're thinking about a lifetime. We're not thinking about one customer interaction. So I think there is like this idea of thinking in a bigger scale, which then suddenly makes your ideas feel much smaller, and where you can say, at the end, it might be not so interesting to do that, because the added value for in the seventh generation of us doing that, so maybe let's not do that. And so, so that's like also an interesting kind of like reframing.
Yeah, I think it's hard to always have that view, and it's important to have it maybe in one person on a team or as a undercurrent, but there's always reality, and like businesses run in quarters and cycles, and we do have to have that scale too. But when you have a step back every now and then, it does give you that perspective to make decisions. Is this really something that we need to lose sleep about? Is this the best use of our money? Is this the best use of our talent?
And this advice that you're bringing, which is this thick thinking hats of sustainability, having like a seventh thinking hat, which would be like this super long-term thinking hat, of having saying we don't need all to be thinking about that, but we need someone on the team who's like the nudger saying,
yes,
by the way, if we think about that in a bit of a bigger scale, doesn't matter what we're doing here. Or if we're doing that and at the bigger scale, wow, that's going to be really great, this little thing here. It's, oh, wow. So maybe let's put more energy on that tiny thing, which we didn't think would be very interesting. But if we look at in generations, it has a big, much bigger impact. So that's super interesting. I'm taking a lot of notes. So thank you so much for that. I'm just finishing that note so that I don't forget about it. What I'd love to do, if that's okay for you, is to slowly come to a bit of a synthesis. And maybe usually that's, we're going to have this classical moment that happens in workshops or in weddings, which is when you say, and now we're going to marry these people. If there is someone who still has something to say, now is the right time. Then there is a guy, I love her. So that might happen. But so I'm going to do like the summary. And then I'm sure you're going to have a I love her moment with another thought to add on it. So like the big topic that I feel we've discussed today is how to fight climate anxiety and paralysis. That's I learned a lot from you on these elements. And there are a few points I've written out, I think 10. So I'm just going to go through them. They're rough notes, so maybe they will be merged in less, or maybe they will come out more. But for now, there are 10. And the first one is, if you're overwhelmed, start local, start with your passion, start with your skills. Feels already much more doable. The other thing is, don't do it alone, because if you're with other people, it builds the motivation to do it. If you're doing it alone, then it doesn't work. And how to not do it alone? Either search community or create community. And even when it's about creating community, you can just steal it from somewhere and say, oh, this is really cool how they do it in that other place, and I'm going to do the same here. And community is only one email away, as we learned from your story. And the other reframing that you're doing is, it's a good creative constraint. All of these climate issues, policies, regulations and things, we can think about them as nature giving us the best brief. And nature is a good client. It's giving us a clear brief. And as people designing things, we should be happy about having a good brief. And then there is this notion of, sure, you're going to mess up, and that's part of it, but still the consequences are decades away, so you can still a bit adjust. And even in messing up, there is a bit more of possibilities than what we are used to in the tech world and stuff, where it's like, you fail, you're closed. Here, we can still adjust, which, again, brings a bit of anxiety out because it's a longer scale, which links really well with this idea of timeline, change of perspective, change of measurement, which we just discussed before, where we say we need to change our measurement from one person to community, from one interaction to a journey, from a journey to a lifetime, this kind of stuff. And then not having the pressure by just saying we need a thick the seven thinking hat, which might be that one, but we don't need to have it all the time. Another thing that you brought is this element of saying not 100% sustainable, bad, but consistent, at least 20%, 30%, and then slowly adding up to it, but don't try to do perfect, but instead try to do consistent. When in doubt, look for co-benefits, look for what serves the humans. The seventh generation principle, I think that's a very strong one with a lot of reading to do there. Start with what you have and think about the end. And we have a few references here, Thinking in Systems, a great book. We have the engineering stuff from Joe, and we have the seven generations philosophy, which is also a super interesting resource. So what's your I love her moment? What did what did we miss in this conversation that
that's
you say,
a pretty good
I have to put it there?
You're great at summarizing. I love the way that you put a lot of those pieces, and I think I might use them even though I might have said them. I think the way that you say it is more eloquent. So I think that covers it very well. Maybe the only thing I would add is that reinforcement of action is good, but as long as it's positive and community focused, I think it's not just about go for it, take action, go out there and act, but it's taking a positive action forward is the missing piece there, even though it's very much through everything.
And how do you define positive? Because community, I see how I can do that. If you tell me action is good, but always include two aspects, community and for good, how would you, community, I know it's, I'm going to have to chat with a few people and bring them in and hear like them saying to me, sounds like a good plan, but it's not a good plan because this will happen and we hate it. Say, oh, okay, interesting. Now I've learned. But how do you define good?
I guess it's a philosophical question. Yeah. And good is maybe too broad and general of a word for it. But I think additive rather than defensive or reactive, I think is what I'm getting at, is if you're acting in order to be in offense or oppose somebody for the fact of sustainability. I think there's a lot of kind of energy that can be caught up in the fight and in the combating those that are not paying attention. I think it's acting in a human and relational and positive way so that you are not acting for the sake of environment over being a good human.
So I'm going to formulate it in my street poetic way, which is don't be a dick. Serve the planet is great, but it doesn't mean that you can go out and say, you put some trash not in the bin, you piece of blah, 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 blah. Don't be a dick. Yeah. You can just go and say, hey, mate, there is a trash. I can help you. Instead of, okay.
Yeah, you've got it. We're a good team. We're good collaborating.
Yeah, but that's a very strong thing. At least it's a bit of a, so I'm going to go in a territory which might be a bit political and scary, but I feel there is a bit of a difference culturally from what I've seen. So I'm from Switzerland, working in Switzerland, and Switzerland is a bit more conservative. And I've been working in London also, which is much more progressive. And it was fun for me as someone who comes from a more conservative culture. The amount of dickness, if I can call it like that, where, you know, people coming at me like saying, oh, this is bad. This is, you shouldn't do that. No, it's you could just say it in a way that is nice. I'm not from here, so tell me how we do things here and I'm going to do it as you want. Because I'm a guest here, so as a host, you have to introduce me like we do in Switzerland. We tell people, here, we take shoes off before entering. Yeah. And we don't tell the guy once he's... Yeah, it's you don't tell the guy once he's in the kitchen, you're a dick. You take a bit of...
Yeah.
And that's
interesting. Yeah, it's maybe the carrot and stick principle of behavior change is just, okay, we've got a lot of sticks already. Maybe we just need a few more carrots.
And is this something that you see is a real struggle? That you see like this don't be a dick thing is something that you see as quite big?
I think it's getting better. I think that the conversation around that kind of like positive framing of things versus doom and gloom. That's the big scale of it. But on the interpersonal scale of it, it's just don't be a dick. Just because you know this and the other person doesn't know this doesn't mean you should yell at them about it. They're on their own journey. Let them get there and help them. Don't scold them for not being there already.
If you have one more minute, do you have one more minute?
Yeah, it's lunchtime now.
Then I leave you for lunch because it's an important thing, obviously. It's super interesting because from a psychology perspective, the thing that I've been learning in the last year is it's called from motivational interviewing, which is a thing which is made, maybe you know about it? Okay, good. So for those who don't know about it, who are listening to us, this idea of how do you motivate people for change? And the one thing that they say in a very short way and a bit simplified is advice doesn't work. Telling people what they should do just doesn't work because usually what it makes is that people then give you back all the reasons why they don't like your advice. And being a dick does exactly that. Which is if you yell at a person, the only thing that they want to do is explain to you why it was in fact their true right to not put the trash in that bin and why you are the sucker.
You're solidified in that belief.
Exactly.
And go the opposite direction.
Which is a very interesting thing to just feel that the push that we have to correct people, to be right, to give advice, usually just does backfire. And which is hard, which is a very hard thing because we have to work in other ways, which are more supportive, reflective.
It takes more energy to inspire than to scold.
Hey, thank you so much for that last I love her moment.
Yeah.
It was really cool. Thank you so much for that.